This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotatonetwork.com.
Back when I was in the Academy, we would follow every toast with a song.
From the historic Cosmic Potato Studios, welcome to Star Trek All Access.
I take it the odds are against us, and the situation is grim.
You could say that.
Sounds like fun.
This is your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek.
Saddle up. Lock and load.
Join us as we dive into the newest content coming available on CBS All Access, as well as retrospectives of the past series and films.
You have no idea how much I'm restraining myself from knocking you on your ass.
Now, on with the show.
There's coffee in that nebula.
Hey everybody, welcome to the program, and welcome to our live stream. Everyone that's watching on Facebook, my name is Sean Ray, and this is Star Trek All Access. Tonight, we will be discussing the 10th and final episode of Star Trek Picard's first season, which was titled Et in Arcadia Ego Part 2, written by Michael Chabon and Akiva Goldsman, and directed by Akiva Goldsman. The IMDb description says Picard and his team are pitted against the Romulans and the synthetics of Coppelius in a
Coppelius
in a final confrontation. And with me on the call today is Rick. How are you, sir?
Please, friends, choose to live.
And we have Mr. Christopher DeFilippis. How's it going?
J'ai robot. Virginia's, that's French for iRobot.
Virginia's here as well. How are you?
I'm doing as well as can be expected. Thank you.
Mr. Scott Madison, how's it going?
Clever quote from this week's episode.
And John Irons.
I agree with Virginia.
Okay. Before we actually start talking about the episode, I wanted to ask you guys about something. So it came out this week that the episode last week had a scene where we see the admonition from the perspective of Sutra as she's doing the mind meld with Soji. And we see a bunch of shots. And it came out that some of those shots came from, you know, Shutterstock or somewhere like that. I didn't have a problem with it because the main reason I have a problem with it is because the way that it was used, they're so quick. You know, why not save money where you can, and you're why create visual effects for something that's going to be on the screen for like a tenth of a second? You know, when you can save money by taking a picture that's already out there and just doing some touch-ups on it, you know, add some stuff to it, add some movement to it and things like that. But there's a lot of people that are like, this show is so cheap. They're using all this clip art. But pardon, I wanted to bring that up and see what you guys thought about that.
I think they might be overstating it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, this show is using clip art. No, this show is using stock footage. And they paid for it. Now, is this a Star Trek production? Do they have the budget to make their own effect shots and create their own digital scenes for that? I'm sure they do, but for whatever reason they chose not to. And as long as it doesn't have a Shutterstock watermark across the screen in the episode, then I don't care.
Google Images or Getty Images or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. My response to when I saw the post about that, and no slight to the person who posted it, but I was like, yeah, and it's just like, it's such a non-issue. There's so many other things to discuss about the show that the fact that they threw a couple of pieces of stock, and they even, I will grant you that the robot with the Starfleet Delta added to its chest was kind of silly, but again, it was on the screen for, you know, 2.5 seconds, if that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this show was already rushed. And so anywhere that they could, you know, save a little bit of time and money, why not?
I heard a rumor, and I don't know how true it is. I heard a rumor that they had to cut some of the budget from Picard because Discovery went over their budget in season two. Which may, maybe
hadn't
true.
Heard anything about that.
I don't know.
I didn't have a problem with it. I probably agree with the two of you. More Scott, graphic designers unite. Like, I get it. You know, the deadline's coming up. I guess, and let me know, like I said, I moved my mic. Let me know if this is too loud. Because it was such a brief thing, they just could have left it out. Like, there's only like three or four shots that I can think of that, and even the robot thing, you know, they basically took the template and put something else over it. But the decomposing fox or whatever, like, they basically, it's like, you know, copy paste. did I notice it? Yes. Did it bother me? It didn't bother me. But they could have left it out. But I don't care enough to make it a complaint.
This is the internet that lost its shit over a Starbucks cup.
Beat me to it.
Well, you know, Star Trek has been known to reuse their own footage before. I mean, Star Trek Generations, when the Klingon Bird of Prey exploded, it's the same shot from Star Trek VI. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, no changes. It was the same thing. So,
but I think that's different. I do. Maybe it shouldn't be, but I think that's different. If you make it and you reuse it, that's different from. And again, I don't care.
But it's like I said last week, you know, I thought that I recognized the fox decomposing from True Blood's opening credits. Yep. And obviously, if that's true, if it's the same footage, then it's stock footage that True Blood used in their opening credits every single week. And nobody's claiming, oh, they're using stock footage, you know.
So. Well, anytime you download a photo, there's a little counter that says how many times it's been downloaded before, so they should just have a cap. if this image has been downloaded more than 1,000 times, then
you're gonna force people to be original.
Yes. Yes, because I wield so much power in the Star Trek production studio.
Before we get started, I wanna poll the panel here and anyone that's listening to us at the time we're doing this live. Because I saw something, because one of my quibbles that we will get to, no doubt, had to do with something that I thought was general knowledge, and then someone who I thought would have known mentioned that they weren't aware of this fact. So I just want to ask all of you, were you aware that before the show even debuted, they had been greenlit for season two, and we're talking about that they had season two coming up?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I did.
Okay. I presume so. But I know Patrick Stewart was on The View, and he invited Whoopi Goldberg on to season two. Mm-hmm. So I presumed that he knew that there would be a season two.
I think his doing that was right around the time, either right before or right after it was officially announced that they had been greenlit for season two.
I thought that I had remembered seeing that they were greenlit for season two before the premiere even came out.
That's what I said. Yeah, before it even premiered.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that I was right, that was kind of general knowledge and not something, you know, the fact that we're shining a microscope onto this show is how we heard about it, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe both.
Maybe
you're polling the people on the show.
That's true.
Okay, so as far as the show goes, I think that overall they stuck the landing. I think that this was a good episode. It wasn't the best episode of the season, and I thought that some of it was a little bit sloppy. And I'll get into some of that. And I think some of you probably agree with me on some of these parts, but. I'll get into all that as we go along, but that's, if I had one criticism, it would be that there were a couple of things that they set up in the last couple of episodes that didn't really get much of a payoff in this episode. Virginia, what did you think overall?
Well, for me, Next Gen is sort of like my comfort show. And the world is really shitty right now. And so I fully admit that my bias may be coming through, especially on this episode, but it felt like very Next Gen to me. Like, you know, Soji learns her lesson about how, you know, she was good all along or whatever. Picard gives his, you know, speech. So to me, it was like comforting in these times, but I fully admit there are like several problems with it, but like, I don't know, emotionally I loved it, but practically there were a few issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Chris, what about you?
I mean, I thought it was all right. I think, like you said, Sean, it really did stick the landing. The ending was the best part, because the ending was, to me, the only part of the entire episode, and maybe one of the only parts of the entire first season that felt earned. And it's based on the history between Picard and Data. So there was an emotional payoff there, you know, decades in the making. The other stuff just seemed to be almost like, this is a finale, so these are the things that we have to do. We're clearing the decks for the second season. We're leaving a couple of loose threads, not many of them. And it was almost by the numbers to me. Even to what to Virginia's point, they seem to go out of their way to make it especially Star Trek-y with the speech and, you know, having Starfleet come in at the last minute with apparently 37 to 50 of the same exact ship. That's another thing that was a little weird to me.
Riker. That copy-paste button came in real handy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why that would have been, but, you know, I guess we'll talk about that. But on the whole, I thought the episode was enjoyable. It was watchable. It was plagued with more of the same problems that I saw throughout the entire season.
Okay. I want to remind, if you're watching us on Facebook Live, feel free to make comments. We can see your comments. If you have questions about parts of the episode as we go through it, put them on there. We'll answer them the best that we can. If I have something hanging out of my nose, please let me know. And Scott, what'd you think?
It was fine. I liked it. It was a nice episode. I had more issues with it than I really wanted to have. I wasn't pleased with the number of issues I had by the time the episode was over. But, you know, by and large, when I look at the whole thing as an episode on its own and as a season finale, it was good. I certainly didn't regret it like I regretted the final season of Game of Thrones. But but I didn't love it, and I wanted to. Especially with it being a season finale for this character, I wanted this finale to grip me and reach me and move me rather like the season premiere did, and it did not, which is unfortunate. But we know they're coming back for season two, so they'll have more opportunities to get it more right.
All right. What about you, Rick?
I am going to be both an apologist and a harsh critic of this episode. I had a feeling, you know, I loved it. All right. Just, you know, in general, overall, I really enjoyed it, but it's got some serious problems. I wasn't as emotionally moved as I had hoped to be. Especially at the parts where it was very clear, they're like, you will cry now. And, like the Data scene didn't do anything to me, which I was rather surprised about, because my wife was bawling her eyes out at that point. And just waiting to see if she's playing Diablo. you know, usually I'm the one reaching for the Kleenex, and you know, I might hear her sniffle once or twice, but It did get me. I did tear up many times in the episode. But I have some problems with the fact that we knew that there was no way in hell Jean-Luc Picard was dead or was going to stay dead. And, you know, they put so much time and effort, and everybody did a great job on the episode. I have no problem with the acting whatsoever. But that whole sequence was just utterly wasted by the fact that we know there's another season of Picard coming up, which means they're not going to have some other guy playing Picard, or they're not going to kill Picard, and we're just going to go on with the La Sirena without him. So it just...
Maybe they changed the name of the ship to the Picard.
there were conspiracy theories from the haters saying they're going to kill Picard and they're going to change the name of the ship because all Star Trek series have to be named after the ship that it's about.
I'm so sick of those people. But overall, yeah, like everybody else, I laughed, I cried, I cheered, even for the stupid Deus Ex Machina stuff. The problems with this episode were no worse than, you know, the Reliance computers can't tell the difference between one planet and another, or the entire Klingon Empire relies on the one moon. You know, Star Trek has a habit of getting caught so much up in its message that the story suffers for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what this kind of got mired down in. But we have more to talk about. So that's, yeah. Move on.
John, what about you?
I agree. I think I agree with everyone that it was a very enjoyable episode. I feel inclined to slightly disagree in that I'm not as disappointed that I think as it sounds like some of you are. I liked it. I liked it a lot, but they did that thing that Star Trek always does. Well, yeah, they did. It seemed like they went out of their way to do a very Star Trek-y thing. Well, yeah, they did. It's I'm not sure.
What show is this again?
Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, we know we're not going to kill Picard. So, well, no, they're not. You can presume if you watch an episode of Next Generation, they're not going to kill everybody. Like, I mean, it's probably going to be... So, yes, I agree with you all in the sense that it was not a perfect show. It was an enjoyable finale. And maybe I went in with lower expectations. I didn't expect to be particularly moved. So there were points that I found were surprisingly emotional. So there were also points where, like, yeah, that's what I figured they were going to do. And, yeah, Chris, you're completely right. Like, we got to solve this, got to solve this, got to solve this, got to solve that, and then we can move on to season two.
Mm-hmm.
But by that same token, yeah, they got to solve this, and then they can move on to season two. Like, so I didn't necessarily view that as a negative. I didn't want them to take any... I didn't want them to make any bold choices. I personally wasn't 100% sure that they weren't going to kill Picard and replace him with, you know, the 2020 model Picard.
Tom Hardy.
Making Venom 2.
Spoilers. I'm glad that they didn't. I didn't know that they weren't going to. I did not expect the final sequence at all, and I thought that was great. I didn't cry, but it got close. It was emotional. The scenes where people were dealing with the death of Picard were surprisingly emotional to me.
That's when I cried, yeah.
Yeah. I saw someone online. They were like, what's up with this scene of Raffi and who was it?
So
Elnor. Yeah, Raffi and Elnor. I could have done without that, and it would have been nice to see more. And it was like some tech thing. It's like, I wanted to see more of the props or something like that. I was like, all right, I mean, it worked for me. I could have less props and more people is fine with me. I thought that I really, really enjoyed the scene between Seven and and
Rios. Yeah.
That was unexpected, but perfect. Like I felt like that is exactly how that would have gone between those two characters from what we know of them. I thought that was great. Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, just in summary, yes, I liked it. I noticed some things that had kind of been there for a while that I didn't notice before. So I'll bring those up later. But yeah, thumbs up.
I still maintain, yeah, that Jerry Ryan, I have no specific knowledge of this, but I think it's kind of a, you know, accepted. Jerry Ryan was hired to get some TNA into Voyager, and we ended up getting an actor who was so much better than Star Trek deserved. And I think she, every time she gets on the screen, she just proves it over and over again.
Yeah,
how amazing she is. And this episode was no exception.
I love that they're drinking and they hate the drink, but they can't stop drinking it. Like, well, it'll get you drunk. Bottoms up.
So maybe a callback to Data in Generations.
I hate this.
It was
more, please.
Yeah. I know I'm jumping towards the end of the episode. We'll talk about everything, but I got more emotional watching the Data death scene than I did the Picard death scene, because, like Rick said, I knew that they were going to have a season two, and that Patrick Stewart would not have invited Whoopi Goldberg to come to season two if he knew that Patrick Stewart wasn't going to be playing Picard in season two, you know. But yeah, that the death scene with Data, I thought was more emotional, just because we don't know. We knew Picard was going to come back. We don't know that this is probably it for Data. You know, this is the end of Data. I have some more existential questions about that scene that brings up. I think I'll save them for when we actually get to that scene. So let's start at the beginning. The episode didn't open with a flashback like most of the other episodes did. They had an extended previously on segment.
I was going to say the previously on was almost like a whole series.
Yeah. So. They flash back the whole season. All the main points, all the highlights anyway. So, Narek is on the planet. He's on the Borg cube. And he's collecting some grenades, and Rizzo finds him. So up until this point, we didn't know what had happened to Rizzo. Last time we saw her, she was being attacked by XBs, and she was either going to be assimilated or being killed or something. I don't know, but anyway,
she was beamed out.
We saw the briefest glimmer of a transporter beam right before they cut from that scene. There was an indication that she beamed away. We all assumed that she beamed onto a Romulan ship and took off, but apparently
just to a different part of the artifact. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apparently so, because she was still on the cube.
So, or unless she left and she came back, you know, I don't know. But, Narek is trying to, Rizzo's trying to get in his pants, it sounds like. You know, she's being her usual seductive sister self, you know. And then he's like, no, you know, I'm trying to get these grenades coming, because I'm going to go blow up that beacon thingy that they're building over there. So,
well, this was one of my favorite exchanges between the two of them, where she, you know, she puts the knife to his throat and then turns around and then she. Now, I really liked Narissa in this episode, and I'm going to miss her, because we were finally starting to get more out of her than just snidely whiplash with pointed ears.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's finally showing some emotion other than just, you know, creepy. But I loved the exchange between the two of them. I found the nest. Did you fuck any of them? No. Did you kill any of them? Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I have a theory about that. I don't know if it's a theory time or not.
When she asked him that, he didn't just say no. He said, no.
No. He said, not yet.
Yeah. So Picard's being held prisoner. And last week it looked like Girardi had taken the side of the sense, but this time we see very quickly, they make it very clear early on that she's not on their side. She's still on Picard's side, and she's trying to bust him out. Well, she does bust him out. What is it with this show and yanking people's eyes out of their heads?
Well, that this one made sense, even though it was gross as hell.
Yeah, but it's kind of a trope of pulling somebody's eye out so that you can hold it up to the retinal scanner and get into a door that way.
Well, as soon as Soji did that, I was like, oh, someone's eyes, another eye is coming out sometime. Yeah.
I gotta think a positronic skull is really freaking heavy, so the eye is a little easier to handle. And at least they showed it off camera this time. All you saw was her holding the eye. You didn't actually see it popping out of her face.
If you watch it with the subtitles on, it just said squelches.
Oh god. I know one of the things that I was theorizing was that Dr. Alton Soon was an android. And somebody pointed out to me this week that his initials are AI Soon. You know, I'm not completely convinced that he's not still. I mean, we haven't had that confirmed. But so the scene where Girardi comes in and says, hey, the Golem has some files that need to be decrypted, and you know, you have the best decrypting kung fu that there is or whatever. When he walks out, he does the data walk, you know, he walks out where he's kind of, his shoulders are kind of going back and forth, like, because Data had a way of walking that wasn't like an android walking. It was more like an android trying to walk like a human, you know,
it's the same guy, right?
I know it's the same guy, but he's playing a character. He's not just Brent Spiner walking around.
He might actually be Brent Spiner.
I don't think so. I think it was purposeful. I think it was purposeful.
But at the same time, I know you mentioned that it was not confirmed whether he was biological or not. Michael Chabon did confirm in an online Q&A. He's been addressing viewer questions on Instagram like after these episodes, and he did confirm that Alden is the biological son of Noonien Soon from before he met Juliana, before they got married, before they made Lore and Data, and before all that, he had a son, and that's who that is. So he's legit human, according to Chabon.
Yeah, but I don't believe it when they say that stuff, because they're the same ones.
Well, you know.
Well, they're the same ones that said that Ash and Voke were not the same thing.
No, they're not.
So
that was a different production team.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. They'll lie to you.
Yeah.
Oh, they're getting on to us. We gotta make up some crap.
And also, Chabon is not coming back for next season. So, what does he get out of lying? He's out the door anyway.
A big check.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Deus Ex Machina that never
the Ocarina of Time.
Okay, so the magic wand that they give to Raffi, and Rios uses it to fix the ship. So it's kind of like Chekhov's gun, where if you introduce it in the first act, you have to use it in the third act. So when they started using it in this scene, I was like, okay, they're going to use this thing later. And in my head, I was like, they're going to use it to fix Picard. Whatever's
That's
wrong with his head,
expecting.
They're going
to
use
it. After, I was saying, why didn't they use it to fix Picard?
Yes. Yes. Because she just used it, and I'm jumping ahead, but she, you know, moments after she uses it to create all the multiples of the ship, moments after,
yeah,
he has this inoperable thing, and she, a doctor who specializes in biology, can't think of a thing to just say out loud to make... I would have been fine with it. This is one of my problems with the show, in case you couldn't tell. This is one of the things I had an issue with. You just used it. You can't say you forgot that you had it. You just used it to solve an impossible problem. I would have been fine with it. And there were a couple of places in here where if it didn't work, fine. Like, if you still resolve it the same way, that's fine. That's good. But she should have... it's inconsistent, which is my big... don't be inconsistent. At least not without a reason. That she wouldn't think to try it. If she tried it, if she came up with I need a blah, blah, blah scanner, blah, blah, ectomach, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And it couldn't make it, or it didn't work, or the best it could do was put him in stasis or something, that would have been fine. And then they still, and then everything else could have resolved the exact same way. But the fact that she didn't even try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it would have been as simple as a line.
Well, my problem was that what she did use it for didn't matter. Because, yeah, they used it to multiply the ship and make it look like there was more ships. But that lasted like 2 seconds.
It bought them like a minute, that crucial 84 seconds
for stuff to show up. I guess.
Well, it's not like the Romulans were in a hurry to fire. They're really taking their time.
But the problem with the when you introduce a device that you say all you say is it fixes things and it seemingly can do anything. Once you introduce something like that, then I don't know. It's like anything that you come up with story wise, you can't justify not using it. It's like the Superman problem. You know, at one point in Superman's history, he got so powerful that he could blow out a star. Well, once you get that powerful, then they can't create a bad guy that you can fight. You know?
Again,
it's the classic Star Trek trap of the magical disappearing technology. Every episode, Data or Geordi or Wesley would come up with something to save the day. And from that one use, you can think of, just off the top of your head, 24 things that they can do with it that would make life easier across the board, but you'll never hear from that technology again.
See, I guess I had like a different read on it. Especially after we talked about the androids being advanced enough to mind meld last week, I thought the imagination gun or whatever was just like maybe a super advanced exocomp. And so it could only work like on technology. And so to me, it made sense that she wouldn't have used it on Picard because it's an exocomp. It only works on machinery as far as we know.
Yeah. And that would be fine. I just wish they would have said that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would have been, if she had tried it and it didn't work, that would have been fine. Like, oh, I'm sorry. We're all androids here. This isn't designed to work on organics. It can only fix machines. Fine. Okay. That's cool.
My biggest problem with that scene was that she used it at all. Because as far as I remember, she wasn't there when Saga or whatever her name was gave it to whoever. Did she give it to Rios?
But
anyway, so this thing is sitting on the dashboard of a ship that she shouldn't, I guess, being a biological android scientist means you know how to work a ship too. But she goes, hey, we need a this. Look at that thing I've never seen before. I'll bet that's a this. And then she does it.
Yeah. I was fine with that. I headcanoned that a couple of different ways. A, it does kind of look like a fidget spinner. So she's playing with it and just thinking out loud. Yeah, exactly. Or B, she did spend enough time on the planet working in the lab that someone else told her that we have a thing that does a thing.
Okay.
Maybe she used the thing.
I'll buy that.
I'm fine with that.
But yeah, if it would have been, well, it's, you know, it's kind of like my problem at the end of Star Trek Generations when the ship blows up and all they had to do was eject the core. And all I needed was one sentence of Geordi, you know, one exchange, Geordi, eject the core. I can't, it's stuck. Shit, get off the ship. You know, that's all I would have needed. So it's the, you know, the same thing. One line could have solved the problem.
Well, by then we just work on the assumption that the core ejector systems are offline because they're always offline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
7 years of that show, anytime that they could have used a warp core ejection, offline.
Yeah, the same thing with the transporter. Anytime that you can solve a problem by just beaming somebody somewhere else,
transporters are offline.
There's too much interference. I cannot do it, Captain. So Narek shows up and he's throwing rocks at the ship. And I kind of like the scene because you know, Rios is like, you know, I kind of wonder what a photon torpedo would do at this range. It's like, how are we supposed to trust you? And it's like, well, I've got a sack full of grenades and I'm throwing rocks. So there's that, you know.
Now, you see, both Narissa and Narek became way more interesting in the last two episodes than they were through the entire rest of the series, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and only one of them got a resolution in this episode.
Yeah,
that was explained by Siobhan.
So what happened to Narek? He just
vanishes. the scene where he was put into custody was edited out.
It ended up on
the cutting room floor.
Okay. Well, I guess there's that. Taken into custody by whom?
Starfleet.
Oh, okay.
What Chabon postulated on the, I think I probably read the same thing you did, Rick, where he just answered about some of the loose threads and some of the questions about season two. But he said, you can assume that by the time Picard woke up in the Golem body and they got back onto the La Sirena, am I saying that right?
Sirena.
Significant time had passed, so they had had someone in to arrest Narek and maybe answer a couple of the questions that they didn't get to show you on screen because of time constraints. And they did leave some stuff purposely vague so that they could pick it up in season two.
Well, if they came to arrest Narek, why would they not also have arrested Jurati? Because she was on the ship at the end, wasn't she?
Because Picard and crew didn't tell on her. They're the only ones that knew that she did anything.
Mm-hmm.
So she never turned herself, because they were taking her to turn herself in and got sidetracked and went and did something else. And she asked, am I still under arrest? And Rios told her, plans have changed. You know, that was a couple episodes back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she saved the whales and got her captaincy back. Oh.
Yeah, but imagine you're right. I think that would have made a pretty interesting scene if they bring the authorities in to arrest Narek, and you know he's on his way, and she says, "Wait a minute, I need to go with you too," or something like that, and then maybe pick up where she's at in season two if she's going to be a recurring character, because they're going to have to go through that anyway. Hopefully, at the beginning of season two.
I agree. That could have been, and it could have been as simple as, she goes off with them, and season two, she served her time, and now she's back.
I have two questions about the scene where Picard and Jurati are kind of facing off with the Romulans before Starfleet gets there. So,
only two?
Two big questions. Number one, what is Picard doing that's causing him so much pain? I mean, I know it's just like the thing is, like, giving way and he's dying. But what is happening that's accelerating it? Is it just the stress of the situation?
I didn't get the sense that anything external was particularly accelerating. It was just really bad timing that right now is, you know, when his symptoms become more pronounced. I didn't get the sense that, oh, he's too close to this thing and it's agitating his condition. Like, that was just...
Second question.
Other than just, you know, an increase in his stress level, and, you know, he's doing more, he's thinking more, he's under a lot more stress, and that might be accelerating it a bit. But in essence, it comes down to, yeah, the timing just lined up where it got serious and endangered his health at just the right time to be dramatically tense.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it was inconvenient for Picard, but very convenient for the narrative tension.
Right.
Because show. That's why.
Not that there was any tension, because the previous episode, the moment that when they introduced the Golem in the previous episode, was there anyone here that didn't immediately flash to Star Trek Into Darkness and hearing Chris Pine say, "Bones, what are you doing with that tribble?"
I did not.
I didn't, but
I try not to think about it in the darkness.
Second question really about that scene. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
No. We'll address this as we go on. So let's stick to your topic.
No, my second question is, when Picard starts having trouble and he starts having pain, wouldn't it make sense for the EMH to pop up right then and say, what is the nature of your medical emergency? And the EMH, none of the holograms.
I'm sorry, Captain. Weren't they from the table?
What? What'd you say, Virginia?
Didn't Jurati purposely disable them?
Well, they were in the last episode, weren't they? I mean, didn't they have a meeting with all of them?
She disabled them temporarily, yeah. But they were back after that.
Yeah.
And it may be restricted to the sick bay area. You know, it may not. I mean, I know we saw him on the bridge, but we don't know that. It just automatically pops up
wherever there's a
problem. Yeah.
Maybe there's a failsafe so that it can't pop up in a time when it might prove to be more of a distraction than a hindrance than a help.
Yeah. That's true. You got to imagine that Rios gets in showdowns a lot.
Yeah. I would say like maybe it's automatically disabled during, say, a red alert, but there is no red alert because it's not a Starfleet vessel. So. Mm.
I didn't think about that at all, Sean, but you are right. Now that I can see it, it's an oversight.
Well, I have another one of the things that I thought didn't really have a payoff in this episode that I wanted to discuss. But so Soong switches sides really quickly because he looks at is it Sasha? He looks
Saga.
At
Saga. Saga is okay. The one that died.
Yeah, he looks at her memories and sees that Sutra is the one that actually killed her, and he thought it was Narek. So when he sees that, he immediately switches sides and starts helping Rios and Raffi and all of them. And he confronts Sutra and turns her off, basically. Mm-hmm. I thought that Sutra was going to be like the villain of the week, and we were going to see Sutra and Soji have like a big kung fu fight or something, you know. And and it didn't happen. He turned her off, and we never heard from her again. She's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that.
For now.
I wrote it down in my notes as a suddenly subduing Sutra.
Yeah.
Because that was very quick, and then all of a sudden, gone. That was literally the last we saw of her was her falling down.
Yeah.
Which, to me, made every moment of screen time for her in the previous episode and anything we saw from her in this episode wasted.
Yeah.
If that's how they take her out of the show, then it was almost pointless. She was perfectly poised to be the antagonist that our heroes would have to go up against as far as the synths on the planet would be. Her leading the synths.
She got knocked out effectively. She's not removed from anything.
But we didn't see her again, is what I'm saying. She got removed from the episode.
Finale. All right.
I think like Lore will be seeing her again in future seasons.
That didn't bother me at all.
I didn't even think of that. She's going to become the Lore of this show.
Well, I mean, we may see her again. I don't think that next season is going to be centered around this synth world. I do think that the XBs are going to have a big part to play next season, and I think that the Romulans still, but I think that this synthetic thing, I think we're kind of done with that because Picard is a synth now. So Starfleet's going to, we can't ban synths because Picard's a synth. We can't ban Picard. He's Picard, you know?
Well, they said that the synth ban is lifted.
Yeah. They said that at the end.
I don't think it was necessarily because of Picard. I think it was the overall context. They're like, okay, our bad. Turns out, blah, 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 blah.
Well, I don't think that they're also going to just go blithely along and not acknowledge the fact that Picard is a synth and it's not going to play some kind of central role in season two. I'm sure it will. It has to, because you're dealing with a whole new iteration of Picard. And what else are you going to explore with this character?
I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be swept under the rug. I don't think they're going to let us forget it, quote unquote. No. But I would be annoyed if that's the central premise of season two, since the synth question was the central premise of season one. I'm like, okay, but you've got a crew, you got a starship, you got some likable people, you got some lovable rogues. Go somewhere and do some stuff.
Because Picard's... All right, so he's a synthetic now. He's technically not a human, but he still has retained his humanity, I guess. I want to see in season two, I want to see him dealing with the fact that one of his worst nightmares is losing his humanity to the Borg, and now he is a completely synthetic life form.
Sure. So, but I don't want the season to be about that. I'm fine with an episode. I'm fine with it being a recurring part of his character.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to be a recurring driver for the plot, I guess.
One of the interesting things that Chabon said in sort of like the postpartum, was that's not the right term, is it?
Postmortem.
Anyway, postmortem. Thank you.
Postpartum.
I suppose you could metaphorically make that argument work.
I'm getting old. I search for words and they're not there, so I just make up other words. But he said that someone asked that exact question. Does, you know, Picard being an XB, now he's in this totally synthetic body, is it freaking him out? And Chabon said, actually, no, because this body has never been violated. It's almost like a fresh start. So he can literally leave that all behind him. And I guess that's another way to look at it. But again, it should play some kind of recurring motif, I think, in the second season. Because I just don't think that they can afford to ignore it altogether. They have to explore it in some aspect.
I'm fine with it. I mean, yes, to some limited degree, I agree. It would be, I don't want them to ignore it completely, but I also don't want it to be what the season's about. Even if it's an episode. But and I saw on the Ready Room for this, I can't remember who it was, but basically this whole experience, this season, has allowed him to come to terms with he's been making this whole time, like, you know, synthetics are people, effectively, you know, it's really, you know, continuing his argument of Measure of a Man, like, okay, you talk the talk, but do you walk the walk? If you really believe that they have the same value as an entity, then this shouldn't be a problem for you. And this situation has forced him to, or is forcing him to, confront it, and he seems okay with it. Again, I don't think that it should never be mentioned again, but I don't want it to be what the season's about.
So here's the existential question that I had.
42.
Data says that they mapped Picard's mind and imaged it to the Golem.
Right.
So is that Picard, or is that a copy of Picard?
Yes.
Is this actually Jean-Luc Picard, or did we see Jean-Luc Picard die and we're now seeing a copy that has all of Picard's memories?
When someone goes through the transporter, do we see them, or do we see a copy of them show up on the other side?
Oh, yes. Don't start this.
It's the same thing. It's the same concept.
Well, Star Trek has shown that with Thomas Riker, that if you create a duplicate of a person, that is the person. They, you know, this episode, I think, out of all of the three seasons now of New Trek that we've seen, is the most classic Roddenberryan Trek that we've seen. Roddenberry was a devout isn't the right word, but, you know, was an absolute humanist, had no religious beliefs whatsoever, and tried like hell to put that through in Star Trek. The network fought him all the way through. Roddenberry constantly was writing how immortality sucks. I have never understood that particular frame of mind. I think, you know, hey, if I can live forever in a program somewhere, groovy, let's do it. You know, if a butterfly that lives forever is not a mortal butterfly, it's still a butterfly. So, you know, those two things right there are very Roddenberry. And so the difference between is this Picard or is this a copy of Picard is really kind of irrelevant, because if we're assuming that the technology exists to utterly and completely map the neurological pathways and quantum substrate and all the other technobabble crap they throw around about it to the point where you can transfer a person's consciousness into an android, which again is something Star Trek has been doing since season one. That is Picard. Now, does the man who died still exist? You know, from a subjective point of view, is that Picard coming, you know, waking up, or is this a copy of Picard? That's for philosophers. For all intents and purposes, for all practical, demonstrable, testable
quantifiable
circumstances. Yeah, quantifiable. That is Jean-Luc Picard. In that
I'm on team Rick with this one, but
yeah, I mean, I know that as far as we're concerned, as far as our stories, yeah, it's Picard. But Data said something in the scene where he's talking to Picard. He says that he doesn't remember his death, and you know, in my mind, I'm like, well, you don't remember your death because Geordi downloaded that copy of your consciousness, that backup, before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't remember before anything that happened after that.
What, yeah, that's Virginia? What they say.
I said before it happens.
Yeah, before it happens. So, yeah, I mean, technically, that's not the same Data that died, even though it was Data up to, you know, one day before he died or something like that.
Well, if I back up my computer and I take it and I put it onto a thumb drive and then my hard drive dies and I get a new hard drive, and I take that backup and I download it into the hard drive, is there a functional difference between the two hard drives?
Yeah, but your hard drive doesn't have a consciousness.
But Data is a machine. So
the human body, the organs, the cells replenish themselves and grow. So the body that you have today literally is completely new and different from the body that you had 20 years ago.
Right. Still,
except yeah. for neurons.
Yeah.
Except for neurons. So does that make the difference?
No. I mean, yeah, I know. I understand what you're saying. It's just something that popped into my mind. I'm wondering, is this the same Picard? Is this a copy of Picard? I know that essentially they're the same thing, you know, as far as we know.
What I want to know.
Unless there was some programming in that golem that we didn't know about.
Well, let me just switch it to like an ethereal plane for the religious people out there. I mean, you leave your meat suit behind and you ascend to heaven or whatever you believe in. Is that still you? I mean, for all intents and purposes, as far as you're concerned.
Yeah.
You think it's still you. You expect to meet people who have passed on before you and expect them to be them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really no different. I mean, whatever sort of belief system you want to wrap it in, you do believe that you can somehow go on and that you will still fundamentally be you, whether you call that your neurons, your memory engrams, or your soul. It really makes no difference. It's just the packaging, the bow that you wrap around it.
I want to start calling my soul my memory engrams. So Data's consciousness has been running in this computer on this planet for the last 20 years.
We don't know.
Ever since they took him out of the
quantum matrix.
Yeah.
It's been running in a quantum matrix since whatever positronic neurons of his were found. And then so from that point up until whenever they got to the planet, and then from when they got to the planet up until the episode takes place. And we do not know that timeline. We don't know when Bruce went and met up with Alton on that planet. We don't know when the neurons were found. That's still a mystery. So has it been 20 years? Has it been 5? We don't know.
And where did they find the neurons?
B4. They got them from B4.
But those weren't Data's. No, they got the memories from before.
They're talking
about Data specifically.
Well, I have to assume.
They never told us where they got the Data's neurons. They never told us where they came from.
I have to assume because in The Next Generation, there were a couple of episodes where Data was communicating with Bruce Maddox and he was still helping him in his research, even though he wasn't going and letting him take him apart and all that kind of stuff. So it's possible that Data could have just given him a couple of neurons.
Data, can I have some of your brain?
Yeah.
Sure.
Can I have a little bit of brain matter? Yes, I'll send it on the next transport.
Although actually I could see Data doing that.
I mean, yeah, it's no different than donating blood. I need a sample of your blood. I need a sample of your brain still. All right, yeah.
The Data death scene, I didn't cry, but I did get emotional, mainly because when Picard starts shutting him down, first of all, Picard kind of shuts him down the same way they shut down Hal in 2001. He's just pulling the little cards out one at a time. No, Dave, don't do that. Stop that, Dave.
listening to Last Best Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to the scene where they turned on the first synth and it started singing Daisy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, uh-oh. Who just disappeared? That's Chris.
Chris
just disappeared. He'll come back. Chris, come back. Come back, Chris. Come back, Shane. So when Data starts turning old, that really, I was like, oh, and you could kind of see fear in his eyes a little bit. That's what got me, was the fear in his eyes. You know, he was a little bit afraid. And then Picard from TNG era with the red uniform and everything kind of sits beside him and holds his hand. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. And then he just kind of vanishes and everything.
Call me a grump, but I thought that whole thing was just so calculated to make people cry. Just,
well, yeah.
Like, this is stupid.
Yes, well, yeah, it's just like, you know, you sound like people that say, oh, they're trying to manipulate my emotions. Like, yeah.
I mean, I know, but like, be a little more. It was. Okay. Yes, I know. I have defended the manipulation of emotions many times, but that was like so hackneyed and ham fisted. I guess it just didn't.
All right, so hypothetically, how should they have done it? Or should they not have done it?
I didn't mind the, you know, laying down on the couch and even the simulacrum of Picard showing up. But the whole getting older thing, the, you know, turning into a rotten apple sort of, I thought that was a step too far. I thought a nice fade out would have been fine, but I think that it took what could have been a very nice moving allegory and just went into Schmaltzville to me.
People that are watching on Facebook Live, give us your opinion. What did you think of that scene?
I see where you're coming from, Rick, but I don't agree. I think because to me the aging was unexpected. It was, you know, there's no quote unquote reason for it aside from, I suppose, if Data is creating his reality, he chose to age before he died. Mm-hmm. Or I like the touch of magic interpretation where because he is synthetic, time at this point, because he's basically been in stasis during this whole time, now that there is progression, it's happening at an accelerated rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that this doesn't make like tech sense, but I like when there's tech with a little bit of mystery or a little bit of magic, or magic with a little bit of tech. I like the blending of the two. So to me, this falls in that category. Especially, I wasn't expecting the Data scene at all. I mean, I guess I was expecting it. I was expecting him to see Data again, but I wasn't expecting put me out of my. He didn't say put me out of my misery, but he kind of did. I wasn't expecting the end of life care decision making aspect. So all of this was kind of a bonus to me, and the fact that he didn't just fade away, I counted that as a little extra effort. So I can acknowledge and understand your interpretation, Rick, but I took it differently.
I can dig that too.
Go ahead,
I saw it as Data finally getting what he always wanted. In that moment when he knew that he was coming to an end, he got what he'd been searching for his entire, you know, physical, corporeal life, which was to be human, to live a human life. And now he finally got to grow old and die, which he thought he would never get to do, and now he gets to do it. By viewing it that way, it struck me as an honest character moment, rather than, oh, those wicked, wicked TV makers trying to make me feel things with their TV production.
Agreed. And I'm sorry, Virginia, go ahead.
I agree with what Scott was saying. For me, the whole scene was like two forms of closure. Like, Data finally gets to be human before he does the most human thing there is and dies. And Picard finally gets that moment to say goodbye to someone he didn't get a chance to say goodbye to, that he loves, that his best friend. So I think the scene for me was like, okay, this is, they've both made their peace and now we can move on to the next stage of mm-hmm. life for Picard or death for Data.
And he also takes that moment. He also gets that added bit of closure. He effectively absolves Picard of the guilt that he's been feeling.
Right.
Like, there's no reason for you to feel guilty. Like, you already got your sacrifice, well, neither do I.
Oh, and don't get me wrong. I love that scene. The conversation was great. And that bit right there with Data saying, you know, do you regret giving your life to save the synth? And Picard says, no, not in the slightest. And Data's like, well, don't you think I would feel the same way about giving my life to save you? That was a beautiful moment. That was one of the best lines in the whole show, in the whole series. One of the best lines in Star Trek, period. That was a brilliant moment. And I, you know, like I said, I didn't have a problem with the dying. I just, the way they did it, I thought was a little too.
I like the one line where Picard tells him that he regretted never telling him that he loved him. And Data says, if I were to tell you that the fact that you love me makes up a large part of who I am, or something like that, you know,
a small but statistically significant part.
Yeah. Would that make you feel better? And Picard says, yes, it would. I wish the next line was, well, it's not true. I was just asking if that would make you feel better.
I wonder too, like, because of his regret for never telling Data that he loved him, if that's what spurred him to tell Rafi that he loved her mm-hmm. when they had that exchange where mm-hmm. he almost looks like he's going to walk away. But then it's like, maybe this is it. Maybe I won't see her again. So I better say it now, or it could be too late.
Yeah, but he'd never said it.
Yeah,
he didn't say it to Rafi.
He didn't say
it. He said it to Rafi. He never said it to Data.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying he said it to Data, but he said it. That's why I'm saying that might have, his regret over never saying it to Data was what part of why he decided to say it to Rafi.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm not the hugest Next Gen guy. So is it a little bit of a retcon to have such a deep sort of connection between Picard and Data?
If you're counting the movies, no, it's not, because they leaned into the Picard Data relationship heavy in the four Next Gen movies, specifically the last three.
I think Picard always felt a responsibility for Data.
Oh, there was always a mentor mentee sort of relationship there, a little bit parental, but for it to be like as nearly as close as family, they really started developing that in the movies when they realized, okay, Picard and Data are hands down the two most popular characters on the show, and now we're dealing with movies and we have to give the audience what they want, so we have to focus on these two more than anyone else. Mm-hmm. Which is why all the other characters got shoved into the background for the movies.
Yeah.
And Picard and Data were always front and center. Yeah. So they had to tie those two together pretty tight in the last few movies.
Another thing that happened in this episode that I thought would have worked better if they'd worked on it a little bit earlier in the season, when Seven kills Rizzo or Nerissa, she says, this is for Hugh. It would have been nice to have had one scene with Seven and Hugh, even if it was like a flashback scene or something, to show that they had a relationship that was close enough for her to want to dedicate a killing someone for him, you know.
It's a fair point. And again, like John said earlier, now that you mention it, I notice it, and it's a plot hole. So now that you brought it up, yeah, I see how that makes sense. But in the moment, rather than focusing on now Seven can get the retribution that she wants, no, this was for the viewers who have loved the character of Hugh for so long. We're glad to see him back, and then to see him snuffed out a few episodes ago, mm-hmm. she was giving revenge for the viewers, not for herself. but according to the script, it was for her. Yeah. But we don't notice that because we're too busy feeling glad that Hugh's killer got booted off a cliff.
I didn't know. I it wasn't an issue for me. It is a thing that I did notice, and now that you mentioned it, yeah, okay, I can kind of see it, but it doesn't rise to the level of a plot hole for me. Because if you tell me that, you know, X amount of years have passed between the last time I saw this person and now, and you tell me, well, in that time, this happened, that's all I need. I don't necessarily need to see it. An established, if there's two characters that I know, well, over this time that they met and they're friends now. Okay. Yeah,
Show don't tell. You know, show us, don't tell us.
They did
okay, but it's not
us.
Seven show.
They did show us. Okay. And this was something I complained about in the episode where Elrond found the keychain, the Fenris Ranger's keychain, and then it turns out it was in Hugh's office.
Yeah, that's there was evidence that Legolas was hiding. Yeah.
And so you've got the two most high-profile former Borg in Starfleet or in the Federation. It is not in any way beyond reason that they would know each other.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt that they knew each other. I just wish that we had seen at least one scene to show that their relationship was close enough that she would want to kill somebody for him.
It doesn't mean
though. I'm going to attempt to create a phrase as perfect and iconic as because show. I'm going to say that's what headcanon's for.
In fact, you know, I kind of liked it because it one of the things that a lot of these franchises do, Star Trek does it, Star Wars does it, when they start going back and start like revisiting old shows, suddenly everybody knows everybody. And then there's like a scene where Geordi built the jellyfish and Darth Vader built C-3PO and blah, 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 blah.
And Chewbacca fought alongside Yoda.
Exactly. And there has to, you know, they should, and like all of freaking Solo was like a massive attempt to retcon almost everything Han Solo ever said. You know, so I kind of like there being, you know, occasionally like, oh, they know each other. Of course they do. But we don't have to see them, you know, having a drink in, you know, a cantina somewhere for there to be a connection. They may never have even been in the same room.
Even if they hadn't met each other, my kind of thinking was she just connected to the Borg cube like an episode or two before.
Oh, yeah.
So if any Borg in that Borg cube had ever connected to anyone who had Hugh's story in their processors or whatever, then once she connected to the cube, she would know that information.
When she summoned to the Borg cube, she walks in. The very first thing she says is, "Where is Hugh?" So clearly, it's not what's going on what happened. Yeah. It's where is Hugh? So clearly,
I have no doubt that they knew each other. Yeah. I just wanted to see something.
The key is Sean wanted to see it on the screen. And
show don't tell.
Sad reality of it is no.
That's what Sean.
No, you can't see that. Bad
job. That's
Sean.
What for.
So good what call, John. What did you guys think of Riker showing up?
I hate so next in time. Theory, but my heart loved it. My brain hated it.
I thought he had bad posture. But
bad posture. Is that Riker posture?
Yes.
Literally how I'm sitting right now.
But it's red alert, like, you know. I didn't really care.
I was not surprised. Once they had that conversation at the end of the episode that Riker was in, they had that conversation where he said, you know, I'm on active, what do you say? He's on active leave or something
active,
like that.
Active reserve.
I was like, oh yeah, well he'll come back and he'll save the day at the last minute. But it's, for one thing, he's a commander. He's not a captain anymore. He's been, he had to take a demotion or whatever. He's Commander Riker. Why would Commander Riker be in charge of this entire fleet?
He was wearing
acting captain.
Well, then they then they gave him another promotion because he was Commander Riker when they were in.
Okay, let me explain something.
He just said he was acting captain.
Acting captain. Yeah, he that's did. Right. He did say he's acting captain.
There's also a difference. Now I'm going to put on my former military hat here. There is a difference between the rank of captain and the position of captain.
Mm-hmm.
The captain of a ship is always the captain, but that's not necessarily their rank. Like, some of the smaller ships can be captained by a lieutenant commander or by a commander or, you know, certain.
Probably this is why on DS9, anytime Lieutenant Commander Dax and Lieutenant Commander Worf were in charge of the Defiant, they were called captain.
Mm-hmm. Would they be in charge of that entire fleet of ships?
Riker should have been a freaking admiral. No one's going to tell him no.
So. Whatever his rank was when he retired, I believe that he mentioned in episode 7 of this season, when he was talking about being on active reserve, that in order to be on active reserve, he cannot hold a rank higher than commander, I think is what he said. So that's why he would show up as an actual commander, but acting captain on that ship or being in command of that fleet. In essence, he was an acting Commodore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I liked that. Like, I imagined the scene, you know, a day or a week from now where Riker and Picard are talking. It's like, you did what? You mean to tell me you were dying moments before I left? You didn't think to mention it?
Yeah.
That's my headcanon. That's the thing.
Immediately after that, Picard would say to Riker, you did what? You just bugged out and took that entire fleet and left this colony of synths and everything that we're... You didn't... Not one ship stuck around to say, hey, you guys all right? You good?
Yeah. Well, I was a little bit disappointed that we had that many Federation ships, that many Romulan ships, and we got no space battle.
Well, we got a cool space battle earlier.
Yeah, they fought the flowers.
That was awesome.
That's so cool.
Personally, I thought that scene looked like mud. I couldn't tell what was going on. It was just a mass of color on the screen with just flowers and disruptors and.
Yeah, it was pretty mud. Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
It's like one Romulan ship couldn't do a flanking maneuver and torpedo the hell out of the complex. I just that whole thing.
But like you said earlier, Rick, it took them 35 tries to ready the protocol to wipe out the colony. Yeah. They didn't need a fleet to wipe out the one stupid colony, but they had plan number 5. It was plan 5.
Yeah.
to wipe. How many freaking plans do you have to, you know, kill people?
Well, they've been
preparing. But was it space calls where it was like, why are you preparing for everything? Just do it.
There was a lot of changing the targets. All right, target the colony. Wait, no, target that ship. Nah, ignore that ship. Target the colony. Oh, and look, Starfleet. Why don't you go ahead and target them?
Commander Bob, go blow that city up while we deal with this.
Yeah, it's like that scene in Serenity when he's like, somebody fire!
I thought at the very end of the episode...
Makes me want to see Serenity right now.
I thought it was a little bit... You know, every Star Trek series has had, like, usually 7 main characters as far as, like, the main crew of the ship, you know. And I noticed once 7 joins them on the bridge and Soji's there, they have 7 crew members there now. And one of them is literally named 7. You know.
My first thought at the end of when the show was over was like, do we get to keep 7?
Yeah, well, it looks like her and Raffi are starting a relationship. They were kind of holding hands there at the end.
Totally here for that.
Yeah.
All right, so
I'm fine with it, but it was very out of nowhere.
Completely.
We don't know how long they've been waiting around for Picard to wake up, like you said.
And that's a fine point. That's
drinking some of that green stuff together, and
that's what headcanon's for.
Smoking some snake weed.
I have no objection to the relationship. I'm not going to say that she didn't show it to us, so it's not valid. I'm not going to say that at all. I'm just saying it was surprising.
Yeah. And remember, before, my caveat was, all right, you've told me that, you know, years have passed and now this is the case. Fine. You, to your point, Rick, I don't know how much time has passed. To me, it looked like, you know, a day or two. And even that is fine. But if it's more than that, I would have liked some indication, you know, flash a newspaper up on the screen.
And you're not wrong.
Facial hair. Show more facial hair on Rio. Something.
Up until we had this discussion tonight.
Head over to a calendar
tonight.
And have the wind blow the sheets.
Exactly.
Up until...
Show someone pacing back and forth.
The last 30 minutes when I forget which one of y'all brought up. Oh, Chris, you were the one that said that Siobhan indicated that time had passed that we didn't see. Because yeah, I was like, where did this come from? You know, I mean, again, I don't have, you know, Raffi and Seven to get cool, groovy, go for it. But if they've been there a few days waiting for the Golem to wake up, why not?
Sure.
It was an indeterminate amount of time. So just think however much time you need to justify that blossoming relationship in your headcanon.
Did you notice when I watched it the second time today, the thing on the table between them was that Vulcan Jenga game thing that Tuvok was doing.
Kalto. Yeah, it was a game. It was a game.
They were like knocking back shots of bourbon too. So I guess Rafi's back. She's not on the wagon anymore, huh?
Yeah,
she's right back off that wagon.
She's still battling her demons, and Chakotay's gonna be pissed.
She never got off of the snake leaf.
Oh, I would love to see Chakotay show up next season.
Yeah. Okay, so I got some trivia for this episode.
Wait, before we, because trivia is like the last thing you do, right? Because I get.
Well, I've got some listener comments too. Go ahead.
That's the last thing.
I was just in the opening sequence. Just little. This is what I was saying before. Little things that I didn't notice, or little interpretations that I didn't have. As we all know, at the very beginning, there's a line where I think Narek is talking about what the apocalypse will look like, and he literally says the sky will crack. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't make the connection until I watched it for this episode, watched the opening sequence again. Picard is like the whole Chicken Little, the sky is falling. Picard is literally trying to warn everybody about this impending disaster, and nobody believes him. then it goes through the whole thing. And at the end, that piece becomes a part. And obviously, there's obvious symbolism, but I'm just like the whole Chicken Little thing I never thought about until I saw it this last time.
Yeah.
I thought that was goofy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's two things that that I think need to be addressed before we move on. The utterly ludicrous big bad space monster growling tentacles coming through a hole in space thing.
I don't know about y'all, but I'm calling it Synthulu. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know what would have worked better, but that was not it. You know, I've been trying to think about, you know, some sort of alternative, even if it was just, you know, some big ship or, but growling frickin' space tentacles just.
I've seen this.
If you would it help, Rick, if you if you ran it through this filter, the synth destructors show up when synth life reaches a certain level, and they need to wipe out the organics. And because they've been doing this for a while, they know what forms synthetics, what forms organics are most likely to fear, and the stuff of their nightmares. And so that's the form that they choose to shape themselves in for optimum destruction and horrifying capabilities.
Yeah, all right. All right, sure. I just thought it was stupid.
So then the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man comes out of the.
Exactly. like, you know, just a big hand just kind of reaching out pull the hole open. Not a Stay Puft hand, like a monster
hand. J. Edgar Hoover. It could be J. Edgar Hoover.
Abraham Lincoln hand.
Yeah.
The other thing I had a bit of a problem is a little too strong of a word, but was like, why is all of a sudden Girardi a Star Trek or a Picard scholar? Knowing Make It So... and the Picard maneuver.
That is another thing that I had an issue with.
Yeah, I agree.
I can kind of explain it away in that he's super famous and she's like a fangirl. She's like a Picard fangirl. Fine. But it never, it didn't really come up before.
Yeah.
Like when she first showed up, I was like, oh my gosh, you're Jean-Luc Picard. You did this and you did that and you did this and you did that. That would have been nice if they were going to pull this in the last episode. But, yeah.
The Picard maneuver, I can almost see as being like maybe something famous. But I'm make sure. It so doesn't track at all.
Yeah. I was kind of okay with make it so. If you're a fangirl, I will let you have make it so. But that, more than anything, more than the Data death, more than Riker showing up, to me, was, you know, the biggest plate of steaming fan service.
Yeah. No, that was the name of his unauthorized biography. Yeah. The bestseller.
Right.
The card at the Starfleet Museum, the animatronic Picard says, "It's so."
even if she had, again, on the Ready Room, she was like, he was like, you know, Stewart was like, you know, I kind of rejected. I didn't want anyone to say it. I certainly didn't want to say it. But you know, it kind of sometimes it just fits. It didn't really fit.
No.
If she had started to say it, then like, can I say it? He's like, fine, go ahead. She said, make it so. Then that would have been fine.
It just, Allison Pill wanting to say it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
Agnes Girardi did not.
We got an engage out of him twice this season. I wish we could have got a make it so out of him at least once.
He'll get nice.
Also,
he will make it so.
I don't know if you do your trivia, and if I don't want to step on your trivia,
Riker's ship was the USS Zhang He, and it's named for a 14th century Chinese admiral and explorer. Showrunner Michael Chabon has stated that he wanted to recognize navigators and explorers from non-Western cultures with some of the ship names. In the last scene, Seven of Nine and Raffi can be seen holding hands, clasping fingers romantically. The revelation of Seven being LGBTQ stems from the early development of the character for Star Trek Voyager. Jerry Ryan stated in an interview with TV Guide that she had pushed to make Seven gay or bisexual, but for various reasons there has been opposition, and it gradually became clear that this is a fight that I could not win, and Seven's only romantic interests were men. Brent Spiner stated that this will be the final time he plays Data. He didn't say he was, and it was the last time he's going to play soon, but this is the last time he plays Data, stating, I mean, there's just a finite amount of time that I can actually play Data, no matter what anyone says, but I wouldn't really entertain the idea of doing it again because I just don't think it would be realistic. He also stated his scenes with Picard were developed because of negative fan response to Star Trek Nemesis, stating, I think the intent was to soften the blow of Nemesis and give Data a gentler exit than he had in that film. The version of Blue Skies that Data listens to is sung by Issa Briones.
That's what I was going to say.
Can I interrupt for a second with the Blue Skies?
Sure.
Was I the only one? Rick, you were annoyed at the hyper-aging. I was really annoyed that Data sitting there listening to vinyl on a turntable like some freaking hipster. Carry on.
How far are you from a vast collection of radios?
I was gonna say, like, I think he was listening to it less like a hipster listening to a record player and more like an old person listening to a record player. Yeah. The only hipsters is because they're young. Otherwise, they're just people listening to record players.
Just for those of y'all out there who may not know the actors by name, Issa Briones is the actress who played Soji and Daj and
Hot Data Soji.
And she's got some pipes. She can sing.
Her first big professional gig was in Hamilton. So, like, she went from Hamilton to Star Trek. She is like a freaking meteor.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I honestly, the Blue Skies, I was never into it. I kind of was like, okay, it's a thing, and I felt like it was overused. even as much as it was.
It's part of our theme song, but
I know. I was not consulted. But I was like, fine, it's a thing. But like this, like it was perfectly placed in this scene. It helped appropriately manipulate me, as Rick would put it.
Which, by the way, our theme music is fluid. It won't be a part of the theme music after the season of Picard. I specifically put it in there because it was a part of the show.
It's fine. It's your show, man.
I was never wild about that being like, you know, the keystone song that they're going to use in the trailers, promotional material, and then a couple times throughout the season, including the season finale. You know, sure, it's recognizable, and we all recognize it because it's a song that Data sang, but it's not Data's song. It was a song that he sang for Riker and Troi at their wedding. It's more of a Riker and Troi song than it is a Data song, but they use it because we remember him singing it. I think they could have come up with something else that was a bit more meaningful for Data.
Well, I think it's just supposed to have that resonance because before sang it at the end of the movie, and that's how Picard knew that there was a little piece of Data still there.
Yeah, but he only did that because Data sang it at the beginning of that movie.
Yeah, oh, I know, but
that's... But what other song would you associate with Data? I understand what you're saying, Scott, but
Pop Goes the Weasel.
I actually already thought of that. Not saying it's a good choice, but
I think it wouldn't have had the gravitas.
Even though Riker couldn't remember what song he was whistling at his funeral, he's like, "What song was he?" Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Pop Goes the Weasel, you moron!"
The entire audience is shouting, and it's "Pop Goes the Weasel."
But you have to do this when you're singing.
Yeah.
And hold a cigar. It could have been that. It could have been, you know, any. If we do a song without lyrics, and they could have picked a tune from, you know, any one of the myriad songs that Data had played on the violin throughout the series. There was a song, I can't remember what it is now, but there was a song that Noonien sang.
Yeah, but you just got to the heart of it. So you can't remember what it is, and you have an encyclopedic knowledge of all things Next Gen. I know Next Gen casually, and I get the Blue Skies reference easily.
I'm with you, Chris.
I put on the Facebook group for anyone to comment their thoughts on the episode, and I got quite a few, because I just put it up there this afternoon and like got flooded. So, Ollie says, they should have just ended it. Riker turning up gave me a huge smile, disappointed that there was no huge space battle. Brandon Ushio says, I haven't seen any announcements for Picard Season 2, but I bet we're going to see Star Trek Rangers. Or we're going to see a Star Trek Rangers show with Seven,
see,
I guess.
See, that's why I said what I did at the beginning of the episode, because I figured if Brandon didn't know that they'd already greenlit Season 2, then maybe it might not be.
You got real quiet all of a sudden,
Nick. I think you may have switched. I was thinking I was too far away from the mic.
The fact that Brandon didn't know about that Season 2 had been greenlit already was why I was curious.
It sounded to me like he was saying he hadn't heard any announcements about Seven being a regular in Season 2, and thus suspecting that they will spin her off into a Rangers series.
Okay.
And that lines up with trivia that I had read elsewhere on the internet saying that one producer or another had pitched an idea of a separate series focused on Seven.
I would much rather see more of Seven than more of Pike. So, but that's just me.
Bulent said, I just want to say that overall, I really enjoyed Picard, but ultimately it was flawed in many regards. I personally thought part one of the finale was pretty poor, but part two, despite some absurdity, was excellent and made up for the previous episode. In particular, seeing Riker show up with the fleet was a high point. The exchanges between Picard and Riker, and then Data at the end really got me emotional, and I would never get emotional watching Trek. I'm disappointed that Elnor was completely wasted as a character. The potential of the Borg cube was wasted. Exploration of this advanced AI was wasted. Narek and Narissa were wasted. Seeing those CGI tentacles coming out of the portal was cringeworthy, but Picard's scenes with everyone were fantastic and emotional. The showdown with the Romulans was great, and I felt really satisfied at the end despite my complaints. I won't bang on anymore. And then he made the next comment was from him too. other than to say WTF with the Gollum. I would have been pissed if they brought me back in my old 90-year-old body.
Now, Scott, when you said when they first brought in the Gollum, did anyone flash back to, I don't remember what you said because I didn't think
about Into Darkness and the
Into Darkness. What I thought was, I do not want to watch an entire season of a de-aged Patrick Stewart, because there's no way they're not doing the show with Patrick Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to, you know,
it'd be too expensive.
The aging works great for, you know, a few scenes, but like if they want to put him into a 30-year-old body, I'm out.
Yeah, that never even crossed my mind that they would try it. The idea of them trying to digitally de-age Patrick Stewart for a whole season, that was a non-starter. Wasn't not even on the table.
What if it was Patrick Stewart's 79-year-old head on like this muscular athletic body?
Well, that's what I was thinking earlier. Is like with the Gollum he's in. What if it like he takes off his shirt? He's like from the shoulders and neck up and shoulders down. He's 94 years old, but everything else is like a He-Man action figure body.
They showed him lying in the
Yeah, that's true. They
did. Yeah. So Tom Corcoran says this season could have been far more condensed. I'm really over the season long arc story trope. Excuse me. I'd rather see arcs that only stretch over a few episodes and have a variety of stories and plots. Jennifer Downs says, for me, the unsung heroes of this series are the casting staff. Every single one of the main cast knocked it out of the park in creating rich, real characters. The chemistry between all of them was so good, I believed all of the relationships were plausible, regardless of what was or was not shown.
I think, Sean.
Huh? What?
Nothing.
What happened?
So regardless of was or was not shown.
We're calling you out for whining about not showing us stuff that you want to see.
Yeah.
About establishing
Shut up. Okay. All right. That's pretty much all we've got for this episode. I want to remind, because I haven't announced this, but we're going to do a series of episodes between now and whenever Discovery starts. We're not going to be doing it weekly because we're going to go back and do Cosmic Potato some, but every couple weeks, every maybe once a month or something like that, we're going to start a series where we are going to be reviewing episodes of The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, all of that cross over with the original series. So I think that'll be fun because there's actually more of them than you think. And we're going to start with Rick's favorite episode, Encounter at Farpoint. because there's one scene that crosses over with Admiral McCoy, but it'll be
so
fun.
We can
because
just watch the last 5 minutes of it, yeah.
No, we have to review the entire episode because it's the pilot, and we've never discussed it at length. So that'll be fun. We'll do that in a couple weeks. But
you guys think I bitch now?
But in the meantime, come over and check out Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, because we're going to. We're going to be going back to doing some regular episodes of that over the next few weeks until, like I said, all we know is Discovery is coming soon. We don't know. We don't have an actual date. I've heard rumors that it would be May, but I don't
think they know when it is because all of the post-production is being done from everybody's home because of this wonderful lockdown we're on. So it's really slowing post-production down on shows all over the place.
Yeah. And, we knew we had a release date for Picard like 3 months before it came out. So I would assume that if it was going to come out in May, we would have known about it by now.
I think Rick is right. I think the current global situation has put a TBD on lots of stuff that normal circumstances they would have known.
Yeah, I'm really not expecting to see Discovery until late summer. Possibly fall.
I'm thinking fall. Wasn't it September like the previous two seasons? They both premiered in September.
Last season, right? I think, started in January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first season was September.
Yeah.
I could see them doing the thing where they do like the first half of the season and then take a big break. Like, I could see like maybe they've got 3 or 4 episodes already done and they might finish that up and then, you know, kind of go on hiatus for a couple of months.
If they can release the first half, start and like do what they did with season 1, start in September, take a mid-season break and then come back in January. If they can get enough episodes ready early enough to do that, then they probably will. Now, I'm not a fan of mid-season breaks, but if that's what it takes to get it to us, then I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they fortunately got all of the, you know, all the shooting done, assuming they don't need reshoots for anything. You know, they got all the photography done. So they're in post-production, but it's just instead of everybody going to 1 or 2 places to do post, everyone's doing it from their living room, and that's going to slow the process way
down. Yeah, and I'm sure they have, you know, a fraction of the processing power at home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, Virginia Lab, I know where they can find you.
You can find me here on the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. My boyfriend and I co-host a show called Wait, You've Never Seen. We're kind of taking an unexpected break right now due to my work and what's going on in the world. But you can find me over on Twitter as well at Virginia in Texas. And if you can stay home, please stay home.
And listen to the podcast.
And tweet me on Twitter.
Yeah. Rick, what about you?
You can find me in my living room, occasionally in the bedroom. Once in a while, I go to the bathroom or the kitchen, but most of the time, I'm here in the living room.
You can. I mean, you can find me in my bedroom, but please don't.
Go to starbasecommand.net. We just put out a new Open the Iris and a new Starbase 66. And I have a bunch of stuff to edit, and I really have no excuse not to get it done now, except City of Heroes is back online, so I've been working on that.
So. All right, Scott.
You can find me on Twitter through my personal Twitter account, at Fleet Admiral UFP. I've been very inactive on all of my Twitter accounts for the past several months for various personal reasons, but I will be making my return to Twitter probably within the next week or two. Fleet Admiral UFP for my personal Twitter account with a lot of Star Trek mentions. At Prime Direct Pod is the Twitter account for my show right here on the Cosmic Potato Network, The Prime Direction, where I interview people and talk to them about their Star Trek fandom. The show will be going back into production, I would think, within the next week or two with my season premiere interviewee, which ought to be my brother. That's gonna be fun.
God, that guy's just everywhere lately. Jeez.
I know, right? You can also find me at Planet Rise on Twitter. That is the official Twitter account for my graphic art side business. If you want more of that, you can visit www.planetrisecreative.com.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Well, I'm gonna give a shout out to planetrisecreative.com. I've been working with Scott for the last couple of weeks. Am I allowed to say it's coming?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've been trying to get a new logo for the Quantum Leap podcast, and Scott worked up some stuff that we really loved, so I'd highly recommend engaging his services. That being said, you can find me on the Quantum Leap podcast with my co-hosts Matt and Allison. And speaking of Encounter at Farpoint, go to Allison's Movie Nights channel. She just did a manic episodes where she, I think it's called Star Trek: The Next Generation Had the Worst Premiere Ever, or something. And she goes off on it, and it's really funny. So I would recommend you watching that on her YouTube channel, Movie Nights. But you can find us at Quantum Leap podcast.com and on all of your favorite podcatchers, and soon to be you know, even better with a terrific new logo. Thank you, Scott.
I like how he plugs my work and recommends that people engage my services before he's gotten the bill.
All right, John, let everybody know where they can find you.
I host Captain Game Show. It's a trivia and wordplay podcast on the Cosmic Potato Network. All of the guests you've heard here tonight have been guests on that show. Most of them have won at some point. I'm kidding. You've all won at some point.
At some point.
Some more than others. I'm looking back over my Picard notes, and there were a couple of things that, Captain Game Show, all your podcast places, on Facebook, on Twitter, at Captain Game Show. I have an Instagram identity that I haven't really done anything with yet, but it is there as well. Rios called Narek a snakehead. Is that racist?
No, that's the ship he was flying.
Oh, okay, good. And I don't know. I don't watch. I mean,
this isn't Stargate.
I don't know. I don't know what the Romulans.
Oh, we got an answer for why Commodore O is named O. Like, that's not really her name. Her name is General Nadira.
Nadira. Yeah, I was looking at that too. Because I watched with the closed captions on, and when she gave that, when she first shows up and gives an order,
yeah,
they have Nadira. They don't say O. And what are the notes? Yeah, so why didn't she try to use the magic tool to fix Picard? And why didn't they try to convince the synths? Once they had evidence, why didn't they say, hey, guys, look, turns out it wasn't the humans after all. They just went to plan, you know, Assault X Force or whatever. Like, why? No, just try it. Try it first and then have it fail and then do the thing.
Are you opening up a new discussion at the end of the podcast?
Try it first.
I didn't want to, you know, did we kind of gloss over the fact that Picard is now a fucking robot?
You don't know his full biological capability.
He's a robot!
I also love how everyone's assuming that the Golem was the only one that Sue could make. He's like, you know, my good fortune is your sacrifice or whatever. And I just wrote down Picard got the beta Golem.
We don't know how long it took him to make that thing. I mean, that could have been his life's work.
But you gotta know that if anybody's going to download regular, if they're going to save as they were.
Well, what I got out of that scene is, you know, my good fortune is not your, something like that. I wanted Soong to say, that's okay, you'll be done with it in a few years. I'll just wipe its memory and start over.
Now, I did love the fact that you know, Jurati is like, yeah, we didn't give you any superpowers, we made you still old, and Picard looks like, fuck.
They could have given him a superpower.
I want to see in
the life-threatening Jason Bourne activation that Soji got.
Yeah,
I want to see in the first episode of the next season that when we look at it, we see Picard, but then have Picard look in the mirror and he just looks like that Golem.
I want to look like Sam Beckett.
Yeah, why do I look like Jonathan Archer? That's weird.
The only last thing that I want to toss out there, this is going to be one of those parting gifts for all the listeners, for when you go back and you rewatch this episode, I'll mention it now. And if you haven't noticed it before, you will, and then you'll never be able to unsee it. Is in the scene between Picard and Data in the Quantum Matrix, they're talking to each other. If you pay close attention throughout most, if not all, of that scene, Brent Spiner's android contact lenses are not pointed in the same direction.
Oh, I noticed that right away.
You did? Okay, good.
That was just his
eyes. I didn't notice that.
I'm glad it wasn't me. One of the lenses must have rotated a little bit because it's like he's got wall eye. His pupils are pointed.
I was busy trying to figure out. I thought he had his uniform on backwards. That zipper in the front didn't look like it was supposed to. I don't know.
My hairline looks a little bit off.
Yeah, in the Nemesis and late DS9 style uniforms with the gray and the division color shirt underneath. Yeah, the zipper was in front.
Okay.
Well, I think they were just trying to hide also, the fact that Brent Spiner has a lot more neck now.
There you go. We had a hot that waddle.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed of my waddle.
All right, listeners.
Why do you think I grew this?
If anybody's still listening, I'm ending the broadcast now. So.
Wait, John has something.
This wasn't me raising my hand for a question. This is me simulating the swoosh sound of the Star Trek door that opened as Picard walked out that I thought.
You heard it too? Yeah.
It sounded kind of it sounded TOS almost.
It was a TOS.
It was perfect. It was great. Loved it.
Yeah.
All right. So if you want to, if you're listening to us on the podcast, then stay tuned in a minute and you'll be able to hear all the different ways that you can contact us. If you're watching us live, go to our website at Cosmic Potato. What's that?
Smoke signal. Tin can on a string.
Go to CosmicPotato.com. Thanks for listening, and please choose to live.
Call my number. It's 813.
Nothing but blue skies.
Oh, God. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Star Trek All Access. You can contact us on Facebook and Twitter, or you can send us an email at trekaccess@gmail.com. You can also send us a voicemail or text message to 205-642-8380. Help the show grow by giving us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. Star Trek All Access is not affiliated with CBS or Paramount Pictures. No infringement of copyrighted material is intended. Be sure to join us again next time on Star Trek All Access, right here at CosmicPotatoNetwork.com.